This episode is brought to you in part by 215 Inc., a wonderful little comic publisher that you should definitely be checking out. Everything I've read from them has been simply amazing, and I have no idea why they haven't really taken off yet. So why don't you help make that happen? Head on over to 215inc.com. That's the number 2, the number 1, and the number 5, Inc., INK.com. And check out all the wonderful titles they have available. And while you're there, tell them Chris from Play Comics sent you. I don't know if it's going to do anything for you, but it might. And be sure to ask your local store for The Kitchen Witch what this episode is about, because it is also really, really good. And if you're not convinced of that now, hopefully you're convinced by the time you finish listening to this episode.
I'm Ryan from the Dad.io podcast, a show dedicated to dorky dads everywhere. Part of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other dadalicious geeky shows at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, I don't even know what a video game is, because today I am talking to Steve F. Orlando. I am assuming that F, you can fill in the middle name. No, that was dumb. That works better in text. You know what I was going for, though. And welcome to...
I usually put the F in front of my name as a preamble, but I will take it.
I mean, I like to imagine that everybody's middle name is F when they're up to your caliber of personhood.
So when are you having David F. Walker on, or have you already done that?
I haven't had him on yet.
Well, David is a great guy, so it seems like we got to line him up.
We will definitely do that. But for right now, I want to talk to you about Kitchen Witch. One of the first publishers that really got on board with getting me stuff to look at for the podcast really came on to just... basically say, hey, here are some cool comics, here are some cool people, talk to them about stuff, was 215 Inc. And so with the re-release of Kitchen Witch for you, that just seems like the perfect opportunity to have you on.
I mean, I appreciate it. And the guys at 215 Inc. are great dudes. They are always working hard. They're supporting up-and-coming creators. And they did that with me. Oh man, probably 7 years ago is when we were thinking about doing The Kitchen Witch, and it ended up not getting a wide release. And in the time since, obviously, I've done some other stuff. I've been at Marvel, I've been in Image, I've been in DC. And so when it came time to talk to Mike and the rest of the folks at 215, it felt like, you know, a great moment that I could pay forward the confidence they had in me almost 10 years ago. And hopefully put a spotlight on them now that I have a little bit of a louder voice with everything else I'm doing, because they make great books, they work really hard, and I want more people to know about it.
So naturally, with The Kitchen Witch, I have to ask, how much restaurant experience do you have?
I have a fair amount of service and food and wine experience. My job before I was in comics, I was a boutique spirits advisor for 10 years. And then also at the beginning of when I was got into comics, I was working for a craft spirits importer. So I have been in and around the restaurant industry probably since I was 22, and I'm now 35. So I've lived in that world, and you know, I'm also a patron, of course, of that world. But working in fine wine, working in fine craft spirits, and selling to haute cuisine places sort of gave me a look at the world behind, you know, the table, and that is really what Kitchen Witch is about, and it's how it came together for me. It's not just, oh, we like great food, but, you know, running a restaurant is one of the hardest damn jobs and one of the most time-consuming jobs someone can have, and I wanted to sort of take a look at what that could mean for people raising a family and a father and son there, and how we could give, you know, a fantastic look into a child's view on that world. Because, you know, I was not only selling spirits to these places, but one of my good friends in Albany, where I lived for most of my adult life, until I moved a couple years ago, you know, I saw this firsthand. Probably, you know, he runs a French and Indonesian restaurant in Albany. It's my favorite place to eat every time I go back to visit now. But it's his whole life, you know, in between having a wife and three daughters, he's there till 10 or 11 every night, and then he's up at 4 a.m. to make his order for day boat fish from Boston or down in New York every day. And so, I mean, I've been almost on every side of it, and my respect for people who keep that fire and that passion going in the industry is incredibly strong, because it's a hustle. Comics is a hustle, but it's got nothing on the restaurant industry.
The restaurant industry can get insane. I used to work in kitchens, and I'm very happy I got out of that, but I'm also very happy I did it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. I mean, it's creative work, but I think what a lot of people, obviously, but as with anything else, it's also intense work, and it's a real job. And I think and in any creative industry, whether it's the one we're talking about now in comics, or in restaurant, or in any type of creative field, because it's not a normal 9-to-5, and because there's, you know, there's a lot of passion and sort of art involved, folks tend to romanticize it. But the fact is, you know, it is real backbreaking work delivering that experience to people. So, you know, you've been in it, you know, I've got so much love for that world, because, you know, you're making, when it goes right, you know, you're making a moment for people every time they sit down. But hospitality and staying fresh and staying on top of what's new and interesting, man, it's a constant job. And like I said, I have just immense respect for it.
So where all did the idea of the Kitchen Witch come from for you, besides, you know, seeing your friend in his restaurant?
Well, I also inherited an actual Kitchen Witch from my mother when I moved out, that I think she got from her mother. And she would always say, you know, it's, you put it in the kitchen and it's there to stop you from having bad luck in the kitchen. You know, it's there to stop you from making silly mistakes and things like that. And that was the other impetus for this series, because I started to think, you know, I mean, that's a little superstition, a little folklore-y, and I studied especially Slavic folklore in college. So I sort of saw a seed there for what could be a fantasy world, you know, if that were to be real and it wasn't just a strange-looking doll that I keep in my kitchen, how would you go about that? You know, if you really did have a guardian angel in the kitchen when you were, you know, that was protecting you and your family from messing up dinner, you know, how could that play out? And that's definitely the other source, family folklore and my sort of interest and study of Slavic folklore, where you have things like the kalabak, which is a pie that comes to life. Putting a new spin on that fantasy type of world. And doing, you know, doing a Narnia that's in a kitchen, which is really the log line of the book. You know, that was the second point of interest for me.
I mean, that kind of folklore is not something I've really been exposed to a lot. So, I mean, just getting the little glimpses there definitely makes me want to go back and see more of it.
We hope. I mean, I'm like so proud of the way the book looks, you know, and the world we realized. Even now down the road, Olivia Palaez was amazing on her line work. Heather Breckel has only blown up since this book came out. And there's a lot more to explore. You know, it's funny. I never thought we'd ever get to do more. So, but now that I've gone back in the process of remastering it, which was touching up the colors, touching up the letters, and me touching up my own script, because I hope I've gotten better in the past 7 years. It was really exciting. You know, I really had forgotten how much I loved every moment in that book and the characters there. So I hope we get to explore it more, because it's a fun, easy to engage with conceit, you know, and as we all know, there's not just one kitchen. So the world scales up very easily. But even if we never do, this story of finding worth in yourself and finding and finding value in your family lineage and heritage, which is what Kevin's doing. It's really special to me, you know, and that's not just because I grew up, you know, in that scenario. Not that I grew up with there, because I grew up with a kitchen witch, because I learned recipes, you know, as a kid, sitting at my grandmother's foot. You know, that there really is, regardless of the specifics of your experience, like, the kitchen is a magical place. I mean, my memories with my extended family were made there. You know, being a gross kid and stuffing, it was my job to stuff stuffing into the turkey at Thanksgiving, and I loved doing that. We were not worried about salmonella in 1987, I suppose. So, you know, I think a lot of times in the very modern sort of hyper-fast world, we forget those sort of, like, moments of magic that happen in that space when we're young. So I was happy to be able to explore it, and I'm happy that it was engaging to you. And look, there's a lot more to say, and hopefully we get to.
With this creative team, was that people that you went out and found yourself, or how did you go about putting this team together?
Well, I found the original team myself, knowing the time period, probably on message boards or DeviantArt, based on when I was probably putting it together, which actually would have been even, you know, more in the past, because we had to get the okay to do it. But when we came back, the original letterer had sort of moved on to different things. So we actually were connected with Micah Myers, who retouched all the lettering and updated all that via the folks at 215 Inc., because they had a great working relationship. So it's a little bit of A and a little bit of B. The original team, you know, we stayed in touch, and I did find them, again, most likely on message boards or on DeviantArt. That was where, you know, a lot of things could be found back then. Now it's easier. It's even easier for creators to, you know, use any type of, like, the visible women hashtags or things like that. If you're looking for especially diverse talent, it's out there, and it's there's almost no excuse not to do the work on social media and find someone fresh, interesting, and give them a platform and a voice. But back then, yeah, it was probably there. And then it was a little bit today, a little bit trusting the guys at 215 and them saying that this was the person in Micah to remaster the book.
Do you think kids these days even know what message boards are?
Yeah, because Reddit exists.
That doesn't count, though. We know that. We're both old.
What I don't think they know, could imagine, is that as when I was younger, I was only allowed 30 minutes of internet a day because my parents were worried they would get important phone calls. I think that's completely foreign, and I find that fact very quaint now. I don't think people, when the next generation can't identify the modem sound, I'll be very sad.
I already know kids who have no idea what it is. So, yes, my gray is showing very much on that. Whose idea was it to get a re-release now? Because this seems like a pretty long while afterward.
I mean, it started with me. I kept in touch with Mike Perkins at 215 on and off, more off in 2020 because there was no consies or anything to stop by the booth. But it just seemed like the right time when we began the year, because I had just left DC and I was talking to the Hollywood Reporter about going freelance. And it seemed like if there was ever going to be a time when there was going to be hype and buzz on a wide release and a remaster, it was going to be now. You know, I had told the world I was going out on my own. I was not just only going to be doing company work, which is nothing wrong with company work, by the way. I am really excited about being, like, in DC's Pride issue in June, and there's a ton of great stuff coming out from Marvel. But what I was doing was betting on myself and not being completely reliant on others, which is an easy trap to fall into when the work keeps coming and things like that. But I wanted to challenge myself. So if I was doing all that, it was the perfect time to show my range and the perfect time, with eyes on me going out on my own, to get this book out there, do a wide release, and to show people that I could do stuff, I mean, you know, that isn't hyper-violent, that isn't full of swearing and sex and the things that God knows I love, but it's not the only thing I do. And so I wanted to show people that I don't just do Midnighter, I don't just do, you know, Kill a Man and these very sort of, like, meaty, raw books. I won't say I have a softer side, but I certainly have a more nostalgic side. And it just, it felt like the right time. If we were ever going to do it, me going out and putting that, putting those chips down on myself, that was always going to be the launch pad.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if anybody has told you this lately, but the book is pretty good.
Well, I appreciate it.
Just wanted to make sure everybody knows that. You know, in case you haven't gone out and decided you wanted to buy it already, you should.
A, it really heartens me to say that. You are actually one of the first people I've spoken to about it and that's read it. So that's very exciting for me. And yeah, I mean, I can't wait. I can't wait for people who maybe have never seen my work before to check it out. And for folks that are following me, I mean, I wouldn't be here without you. And it'll be surprising, hopefully, to them. Because look, I am, my agent calls me the gay bro of comics. I'm actually the bisexual hard ass of comics at best. But I think that there's that, you know, there's a certain energy to a lot of my work, and it is true to me because I have my anger and things like that. But I'm really, like, I can't wait for people to see me do something that's a total pivot and to hear it connect with you. That's awesome.
I mean, was that side of you something that you consciously tried to keep out of this, or was it more of like a it didn't really fit the story kind of thing?
Well, you know, like within reason, like it's more about the telling, you know, because I don't want to be, I don't want to, I mean, first of all, yes, there are certain things that just don't belong in a middle grade book, you know, and there are other things that skew, there are other things in the telling that I think, yeah, it is a conscious choice because it skews it to a different audience, you know, like, this story could bizarrely be like almost a horror fantasy if we wanted, and then it would have been more like Neverending Story, which terrified me as a kid, technically is for kids, but I'll hear that horse screaming in my dreams for the rest of my life. But yeah, no, I mean, I wanted to make sure this was something that anyone could read and anyone could be heartened by, and also to challenge myself, just in the same way that going off and going freelance was a challenge. You know, it's easy for, look, if enough people get punched in the face and enough F-bombs get dropped, people are going to be happy in the modern action realm. So it was a challenge to myself as well to create engaging action, creative action, and these satisfying character payoffs without the things that have kind of become my staples, or at least to present those staples in, through a new lens. Because people, things still get blown up in the book, I guess. It is still me. But it's with a different lens.
The explosions just fit so well, though. I can't imagine the book without it.
And yeah, and also, you know, it was a chance for me to get all of my Lord of the Rings dialogue references into this book and get them out of my system. Your broom is broken. The people who, like me, who think that Gandalf was done wrong by the Witch King. I try. It was nice to finally slide into fantasy and get some of that stuff out of my system, because when I wrote this especially, I had not done any of that.
You know, I'm pretty sure you're going to be allowed to do it again.
Actually, keep an eye on August. It's funny you should say that. there's going to be an announcement soon, but in the time since I set this up, there is another little fantasy thing that has come together, and news is going to be out probably in the next couple weeks, and then it's going to be in your hands for my birthday month of August, and that's really all I can say about that. But it is funny, it's fortuitous, because as things lined up, for people who pick up Kitchen Witch, this is going to tee up some work that is exciting as well for later in the summer.
I know you haven't seen my bank account, but can you please stop making things that I want to buy? Because I only have so much money, and there's too much good stuff out there.
Well, they don't go bad, but I appreciate your enthusiasm. There's a lot. I guess that, you know, we were talking before about like my workload and things like that. And it's a hustle, but it's a great hustle because I'm just creating all these stories that I love and I'm proud of. And it's going to surprise all of you folks because there's a lot of stuff coming out. You know, the end result of always working new pitches and new ideas. I actually try to do a new idea every week on Sunday. My boyfriend has a Zoom with his college friends. And in those 2 hours, I always try to get a new idea on paper because, you know, we're here to be creative and we're here to push ourselves and keep our brain working. So apologies to your wallet, but there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out, more than anybody knows.
So if I came over to your place right now, or, you know, maybe tomorrow, because it's kind of late when we're recording this, what would you cook for me?
What would I cook for you? It depends what mood you're in. My like comfort food answer has to be a scrapple egg and cheese sandwich on like a Kaiser roll. But if we're not doing comfort food, I have a Guinness corned beef that I'm making in the sous vide right now, and it'll be ready probably tomorrow evening. So that has to be my answer.
Oh, I'd go for either one of those.
The scrapple is a regional thing, so some people are afraid of that, but I think it's delicious. So.
Yeah, I've never had it. I've had people describe it to me, and I mean, I'm going to eat it. I don't care.
The way I describe it is it's sort of like, well, when you do it, when it's crispy like it should be, like it's basically like a McDonald's hash brown, but made of meat. And you just slap that on the sandwich with you know, some nice, like barely made of food, American cheese and a fried egg. And that's like, you're good to go. That's the comfort food for me.
What's the best thing your boyfriend makes for you?
So I actually got my breakfast sandwich skills from him because he is a New Jersey native. So breakfast sandwiches are in his blood. But that being said, he is also super good at vegetables because I've just had to rework my diet. So we've gotten like very heavy into things like shirataki noodles, which are yam flour noodles. And things like that. So lots of stir fries, lots of things like that, usually on the boyfriend side. And that's because he cares. And when I recently, after being keto for a while, went to my doctor, he gave me a little bit of a sad face when he looked at my blood work. So more vegetables for Steve. Can't only eat cheese and meat, no matter what the pro wrestlers I follow on Instagram tell me. And yeah, Mike has been really great about that.
My blood work feels your pain.
It was a shocker. However, drinking oat milk can really change that. Great for your cholesterol. So this is not what we're here to talk about, but oats will really change your life, is what I would say.
That's good to know, because I've started on oatmeal for breakfast when COVID caused the breakfast burritos I usually had to stop being in the freezer section, which I know is horrible, you know, salt content anyway there. But that's good that I accidentally backed into a good choice.
There is science to that that I don't fully understand, but there is something that eating them does, because I've seen it in my own numbers, as of my neighbors. There's something that eating them does that makes your body take the bad cholesterol, either burn it or use it, but it actually really does work to lower your bad cholesterol. Somehow it makes one of your organs do a thing, and that thing lowers the bad cholesterol. I'm a writer, not a scientist. The best I can do.
Science, people of science, please come help us out because we have no idea what we're talking about here. We just like to eat oats.
I have gotten into the oat milk really hardcore though, so I can't say I'm sad about it.
I mean, there's definitely worse things, right?
Well, yeah, there's plenty. There's what region can I offend here? There's Jepson's Malort, one of the worst alcohols on the planet, which is a local Chicago thing that I think tastes like Band-Aids.
I haven't had that, and I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Jason Aaron tricked me into trying it one time, and I was unhappy, and then I reverse tricked him by saying I found a better one and made him try it, but it was a trick. It was also just bad as well. So we're currently dueling with that. But that, and I was speaking about my time as a spirits rep, someone tried to sell me tobacco-flavored vodka. And at the time, that was the worst thing that I'd ever put in my mouth. So oat milk, much better than all those things.
I can't even imagine how anybody would think that's good.
You know, based on the guy's face when he got me to try it, he already knew it was bad and just wanted to see how it would go. Didn't go well, but I did not buy that product, neither the original or the menthol tobacco-flavored vodka.
Why? What monster would make that? That's just horrible.
I mean, yes. I've seen some strange things in my life, and some of them I even like. There was a period of time that I was really into the Sriracha vodka that UV put out, and it was really good in a Bloody Mary, but like some things are just godforsaken, and any cigarette flavored vodka would fall into that category.
So if you are making the Kitchen Witch now, I don't know where I was going with that. I had a thought and it ran away.
It would probably be a little less twee, and I would take more time with Kevin and his dad.
Thank you for answering the question I was maybe asking.
So I do have an answer, actually, but that's a good example of what I've learned, the time since I wrote that. After 5 years at DC, it's not that I tell different stories, but I do tell my stories differently. And I ration out time for action versus character, definitely do so differently now. So if I had more another go, or if we return in the future, we'll dig into Kevin and his dad much more. I mean, not much more, but enough where you get a little bit more of a feel before things wrap up at the end.
I mean, I definitely don't want to ask you about specifics, both for legalities and I don't want to put you on the spot. But Mike is definitely going to publish it, right? I'm going to put him on the spot because I don't care.
Yeah, you can put Mike anywhere he wants, but it's coming out. Yeah, it's out, I think, in May or June.
No, I meant new stuff.
Oh, I would assume so, especially if the response is good. I mean, Mike has always been very supportive of me, so we hope this or even Stranger Things. I do have a I do have a gay passion play I've been working on the side that's about Sergius and Bacchus. And even Stranger, if you want to talk about something that's very different than The Kitchen Witch, but 215 has always been pretty fearless with content. So I think you'll see something from me and them again, whether it's a sequel to this or, you know, something I'm working on now or something neither of us have even thought of yet. But I like those guys. And by the way, shout out to their Gory Books line. I don't know if you've seen what that is, but what a great idea that Mike and the 215 Inc. guys had, which is presenting classic horror stories in the format of the Little Golden Books, but they're Gory Books.
I need to get into those. I haven't picked any of them up yet.
I think it's a genius idea, and I wish I had it.
Oh, well, no pressure. You just have to come up with something better now, right?
I'll keep an eye, man. I'm trying to, as I said, there's something new every week. They're not all good, but there's always something new.
What advice would you have for people looking to get into comics?
So it's a little different depending on what you're trying to do. If you're an artist, You have to constantly be working on your portfolio and building your portfolio and make sure that it prioritizes sequential storytelling pages. Very common, really early, because most people know this, not a mistake, is to put a lot of pinups and stuff in. But editors are looking for your ability to tell a story, not do a cover. So that's important. And then you just want to network as best you can, you know, with COVID going on, it's a little different. I mean, all my connections were originally made at Comic Cons, but these days I know my editors use things like the Visible Women hashtag. You know, they use Visible Artist hashtag. You can be found in a lot of different ways. So I would just say make sure that you are cultivating connections and curating your online portfolio, keeping a hard copy one ready for when there will be cons again. And that sort of is a good inroad as a visual artist. As a writer, it's a lot more challenging. There's not any one way to get in. I mean, I myself, it took me almost 20 years to break into comics. I started trying when I was 12, and I didn't get in until I was 29. I guess my real answer is don't let anybody make you quit, and don't quit yourself, because it can happen in a week. You know, you could hear this podcast, write a comic, find an artist to draw it, so probably not in a week. But you find an artist to draw it and go to your first con once cons come back, and the right editor at the right time with the right opportunity, you could get in. Or you could do that 4 times a year, every year for 18 years, almost 20 years like I did, until you both have the connections professionally and the opportunities, often by chance at first, where someone thinks of you to solve their problem, and that's how you get in. So what I would really say is don't let yourself be deterred. Find peers, whose opinions you respect and who have your best interests at heart. And when they give you critique on your work, take it and realize that everybody can get better. I can get better. I can definitely get better. But every creator you know could always get better. So it's not unusual if there's things to fix in your work. And just don't let anybody tell you no. My mentor, Steve Siegel, one of the guys at Man of Action, as I said, met me when I was 12. And look, this isn't a perfect story. I was ready to give up numerous times between the ages of 12 and 29. And inevitably, I would call him and he would say, well, Steve, you can quit anytime. And because I am stubborn as hell, that enraged me so much that I was then like, screw you, man. I'm never quitting. And I kept going. But find someone that is like he was to me, someone who is willing to help you, who is not intimidated by your growth, and whose work is such that you respect their notes and you want to learn from them. And when they tell you something to do, do it. You know, every year he said, you know, this could get better, this could get better, this could get better. And I would spend a year before the next San Diego Comic-Con doing my damnedest to make sure I solved those problems. And sure enough, in my case, when I finally did have something that was professional level, it was that guy, Steve Siegel, after 18 years or 19 years, whatever, that took it and physically handed it to the folks at Image Comics. So it was an almost 2-decade-long overnight success in about 5 seconds, but it happened. And if I hadn't had that middle finger to the world and him, which he knew what he was doing, it never would have happened. It can always be you can always be a week from success, but you're always a couple seconds and one bad decision away from failure. So just remember that. Like, it's never over. And I am a good person to talk to about that because I'm doing my dream job now and I did not get in quickly. But I'm in now. And so if you're listening to this and you're making your books, keep doing it. And look, you never know when it'll happen. But the only way you know it won't happen is if you stop.
Okay, fine. I'll go write my book. I need to stop talking to people about things, though. That's the problem. I like putting people's work in front of new eyes, and, you know, that takes away time from me writing the thing.
Well, this is the other thing, too, is that, like, you should find time to write. Well, actually, when I was a kid, Siegel told me every day, I'm going to be nicer and say that you should have a regular writing schedule, and you should stick to it no matter what. Now, for me, a soft, like, barely dry 12-year-old, he was like, if you don't treat comics like a job, it'll never be one, kid. Bye. See you next year. I'm not going to be quite that harsh, but set a schedule and do treat it like it's already a professional job you have, whatever it is. And maybe if you're doing the things you're doing now, you know, maybe it's only 2 days a week that you write, but you better make sure as heck that you are writing those 2 days that you decide every week.
All I'm hearing is Steve says I should work on writing while I'm at my day job instead of doing my day job.
Well, that is certainly a thing that other pros have had. I'm not going to name who it is because he'll eventually kill me, but there is a pro that I know had a overnight job at a pornography warehouse, and he liked that job because he didn't have to see anyone, and he wrote comics all night and worked every night. So you wouldn't be the first.
Although my father-in-law is my boss, so I'd probably get caught.
That's possibly true. And he was probably not in that scenario with the job I just mentioned.
I would bet not, because I definitely do not recommend it to most people. If people wanted to check out your work, where do you think, besides Kitchen Witch, is the best place for them to start?
You know, it really, there's a couple, is what I would say. Like, because it depends what you are a fan of. If you are a fan of science fiction and superheroes, I would strongly recommend my book Martian Manhunter from DC Comics. Look, hands down, it's my proudest moment at that company in the 5 years I was there. I don't think I'll ever do a superhero book, at least a sci-fi superhero book that I'm more proud of. John Jones is my favorite character. I lobbied along with Riley Rossmo to create that book. It was a 3.5-year labor of love for us. And it's the best thing I've ever done at that company. And one of the best things I've ever done. So I would go in that direction if you're a superhero person. If you are more of an action type reader, I would point out a couple things. I mean, my book Killer Man is my other favorite thing that I've been part of. If I was forced to ask, I would say they're my two favorite children, but you should never have to pick, or so I've heard. I'm an only child. Maybe that's why I say that. Maybe I don't know the truth. But anyway, Killer Man that I wrote with Philip Kennedy Johnson, who's currently on Action and Superman and just started Aliens today with Marvel. Also a book that took 2.5 years of my life, and I'm incredibly proud of it. It's essentially like an LGBTQ plus Rocky type story. And I just, I want everyone that can read it to read it. I'm so proud of it. I mean, there are so many things and things that aren't even out yet. So like, I would always talk about those two. I have to mention my book, Midnighter and Apollo, and Midnighter, it's the book that broke me into DC. It's the first time a gay lead a gay man has ever been the lead of a book in Marvel or DC when it came out. I think I have work that is maybe more complex, but it's so raw, it's so real, and it does make a lot of people smile. So I would point people in that direction, and that's not even discounting things like The Pull from TKO, which is like apocalyptic sci-fi, and it's one of my favorite artistic collaborations because it's with someone. I've never done a book with a manga-influenced artist before, and I did it with Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, a longtime friend, first-time collaborator, and that book just came out awesome. It is currently the number one mystery manga on Amazon.com, and look, it was completely unexpected for me, the way that the story evolved working with Ricardo, and it is, as I said, apocalyptic science fiction. It's a sci-fi take on the type of threats you see in a book like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
And then I've talked with Steve Fox about this, but I know you two are working on something together. How much are you allowed to say right now?
I can say that I already mentioned it in this podcast and you didn't know it.
Well, because when I talked to him before, he couldn't say much about it then either. I was already hooked based on you two working on it.
Well, Steve is one of my best and most foot phobic friends. So I will always work with him. The real answer is the question is not just what am I working on with Steve. It's how many projects am I working on with Steve. So here's what I'll say: you'll see something from me and Fox in August, and you'll see something from me and Fox this fall, I believe October, and if all goes to plan, you'll see 1 to 2 more things from us in 2022. So that's what I would say, is that there's more than you even knew.
And I would say if at least one of you does not come back for those, I'm going to be very disappointed at both of you.
Well, you know where to find us, so I will happily come back. It's going to be a lot harder for me to not swear if Fox is on this podcast, so maybe you can silo us somehow. But I would gladly come back, of course. And hopefully he would too. He's not busy. He just says his dog is half the size of mine.
Did you lock your dog out of the room?
Well, I did, but that's because he is afraid of my outside voice, which is also my phone voice, which is also my Zoom voice.
Okay.
So it's for his own good. I got him when he was 2 and he does have a little bit of anxiety. And especially when I was living by myself before my boyfriend moved in, you know, I basically never spoke out loud, not to be weird, but why would I? It was just me and him. So my phone voice and this type of talk, he kind of doesn't know if it means I'm angry or not. So it's kind of better to have him out there sitting in the dog bed watching Sabrina. And we'll touch base after this.
Well, I'm very happy that you're thinking about your dog and making sure that your dog is okay.
He's a pretty good guy. He's an older gentleman now. He just turned 11, so.
Well, congratulations. You know, as one of 3 kids, I know that very easily my mom's favorite kid was the dog.
Well, they're the most obedient, you know? And so I think it's easy to fall into that.
Well, Steve, it has been great having you on for this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm on Twitter @TheSteveOrlando. I'm on Instagram @TheSteveOrlando. They're both a little bit about diet and fitness and comics, but Twitter is definitely much more about comics, and Instagram is definitely much more about diet and fitness. So that's kind of the Venn diagram, but you'll get both on each, and I'm easy to find out there. I'm as I've been told by my neighbors, I'm very on Twitter.
Well, it's a good and bad thing to be.
Boyfriend would say a bad thing, but I do put my phone down at 10 o'clock these days, and that's my hard rule. So.
And as always, if you want to hear more from me, you could head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast or head over to PlayComics.com, where I have links to all the social media places, because it's just so much easier to tell you to go there and click on the logo for the place you're looking for, because that's where it is. I don't know, I'm lazy like that. If you want to help support the show, number one, go support the people I'm having on for episodes like this, because the fact that they're getting things out of it means that I can do more episodes like this, because they tell people that it's worth doing an episode like this. And I'm selfish. I want to talk to more cool people. Some of you know who I have my eye on. Yeah, it's not a big secret. I'll talk about it later. Also, don't forget the Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to some wonderfully geeky shows. You should definitely head on over to GunnaGeek.com to check them out. No random news right now. It's just weirdness with trying to find the house, and our budget has suddenly gone crazy. Anybody who's curious can talk to me about that later. If you like the music I'm rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, put it down, grab a bunch of comics, especially some ones from 215 Inc. Double especially if Kitchen Witch is in there, although to do that, you might have to find an old copy of the original release or do that after this thing gets released. It's worth it. Go pick it up and go find yourself a new favorite character.